This is Sarah Wade Hutman with Prevention Web, and I'm speaking with Tony Gibbs, who's the consultant to the company Consulting Engineers Partnership Limited, and he's a consultant to PAHO. Welcome to Prevention Web.
Hello, Sarah.
I'd like to ask you first where you're from and where you're currently working.
I'm from the island of Grenada, and I now live in Barbados, but I have lived in six Caribbean countries. Youngster, I went to 10 schools in four islands before going to university. And after going to university, I've lived in two other islands.
And you are a consultant to PAHO in what capacity?
I'm a civil engineer who specializes in structural engineering, and in particular, even more narrowly, into the effects of hurricanes and earthquakes on buildings. So my work for the Pan American Health Organization has to do generally with building standards, but in particular with the standards required to resist the natural hazards of hurricanes and earthquakes.
And how did you first become involved in the effort of what we now call disaster risk reduction?
As a consulting engineer and working in an area where there is little or no enforcement of standards. In fact, working in an area that did not have any documented standards when I started my career, the question of standards was one which had to be addressed by the individual company. And I was fortunate to be working in a company that took standards very seriously. So not only did we aim to follow good standards, but we were very involved in the development of those standards for the Commonwealth Caribbean. So my company, Consulting Engineers Partnership Limited, has been in the forefront of standards development for the Commonwealth Caribbean. So as a normal course of doing our work for our clients, whether they were private sector or public sector clients, we would aim to design buildings which would be resistant to the natural hazards which apply to those countries in which we work. So we didn't know about it as being a specific theme. We don't know about disaster risk reduction as such. We just know that we have to do a job for our client, and part of that job is making their building safe for the infrequent occurrences of earthquakes and hurricanes. However, in the particular field that you are talking about, disaster risk reduction, I got into that by accident in 1979.
Okay.
I was working very hard, I was very tired, and Dr. John Tomlin, later of UNDRO, but at that time working for the Seismic Research Unit of the University of the West Indies in Trinidad, Dr. John Tomlin telephoned me and said there was an 11-day conference taking place at a beach hotel in St. Lucia, and would I like to come and present a couple of papers. And what attracted me was the 11 days and the beach hotel and the opportunity to rest. So I said yes. And of course the penalty was I had to prepare two papers. So I went to this conference, which was about 150 people from
yes.
all over the Caribbean, dealing with disaster preparedness, not prevention, preparedness. And I thought it was very interesting. In fact, they dealt with prevention as well as preparedness at the conference. And those 11 days was not a rest for me, for I got very enthusiastic about this whole thing.
Mm.
And I got stuck into it since then.
Okay. And what are you currently working on with PAHO? What is one of the main projects or initiatives?
Well, we are developing an index, what we call a hospital safety index, which is a tool which would give us a sort of a numerical measure of the safety of different hospital facilities, and a tool which can be used quickly. I mean, typically we would do a 300-bed hospital with about 5 man-days of effort to get a measure as to its degree of vulnerability or otherwise. So I'm working on that with them at the moment. I've also recently completed an independent check or independent assessment of the design of a facility, a healthcare facility, which was being designed by another agency as an independent checking consultant.
You were telling me just before that your work with PAHO began in the health sector, obviously, due to the need for the health sector to respond to disaster preparedness and building safety, but saying that the mandate wasn't necessarily coming from outside of the health sector, but actually starting there. Can you tell me a little bit more about your experience?
What I was saying was that building standards, or the development of building standards, in a formal sense, formal documented sense, in the Commonwealth Caribbean has been driven by the health sector. In fact, that same 1979 conference, which I thought was going to be a lovely 11-day vacation, that was where the Caribbean Uniform Building Code was conceived.
Okay.
And was conceived by people in the health sector. There were four people sitting around a table, and one was Dr. Philip Boyd, who was the head of the health desk of the Caribbean community. Another one was Sir Carl Alberton, who was a permanent secretary of the Ministry of Health in Barbados. And the other two people were Franklin MacDonald, who is at this meeting here in Geneva today, and myself.
Yes.
Then what those two gentlemen did, Philip Boyd and Carl Alberton, is that they persuaded the ministers of health of CARICOM to form a project, to initiate a project, which took place from 1979 until 1985, and ended up with the Caribbean Uniform Building Code. But then coming out of that was all of this work by the Pan American Health Organization, and that work continues, and it's a lot of work that the Pan American Health Organization has done in the field of safe hospitals, but also safe institutional buildings generally, and even beyond that, safe buildings.
Curious to know some of the challenges that you still face, as well as some of the lessons learned since 1979, and some of the lessons learned in the environment of today.
The main problem is to persuade people that it's important to have buildings that are safe in low-frequency events. Hurricanes do not hit any particular place with any great frequency, and earthquakes are even less frequent events than hurricanes. So people go to sleep. A hurricane devastates a particular island today, and for the next 3 or 4 years, it's in the forefront of people's consciousness. But gradually, people forget about it. Another hurricane hits within half a generation. The issue of hurricane-resistant building design and construction is put on the back burner. The enforcement mechanisms which are currently in place throughout the Caribbean, with the exception of the French Islands and Cuba, the enforcement mechanisms are ineffective. They are not effective. And therefore, if one wishes to avoid doing a rigorously good job of hurricane resistance or earthquake resistant design, you can get away with it. So, greatest extent, safe buildings is something which is self-imposed by the design company and very rarely by the client. And the government agencies charged with the enforcement of standards are just not up to the task. They can't do it. So it's as simple as that.
Okay.
Now, the way it needs to be done, especially for the health sector, for very important buildings, and hospitals are very important buildings. In most of our communities, there's only one referral hospital in the small island communities. And that is a facility which is fully occupied 24 hours a day, every day of the year. it's always full. The only referral hospital in a small island is always full. It's full of patients and their doctors, nurses, and visitors. So, as in the case of a school, which if the earthquake occurs at midnight, the school is probably empty. At midnight, the hospital is full. So that's one aspect of the importance. The other aspect of the importance is that if you have a major natural hazard event, hurricane or earthquake, the hospital has an additional load to carry in terms of providing services, especially in the case of an earthquake. A lot of casualties, some fatalities, of course. And so that makes it important. The other reason why it's important is a very expensive facility. And the poor countries which are not very wealthy cannot afford to lose expensive facilities.
So going back to the project that you're currently working on in developing the hospital safety index, what are some of the partnerships and collaboration that is going on to make that project happen? Is there collaboration and partnership with the private sector in addition to public sector? What is the level of awareness? What is the level of awareness at the community level? And how are people getting involved?
First of all, this Hospital Safety Index is the culmination of about 11 years of effort. It wasn't always called a Hospital Safety Index.
Yes.
It started off as being called Initiative to Rank Hospitals, or to give certificates to hospitals. And most countries rejected that. They did not want an agency to come and tell them that any particular hospital was not 100% safe. Over the years, some of them, very few of them, have accepted it to be a useful thing to know how safe their hospitals are. Along the way, there were cases where countries were offered financial grants to have their hospitals surveyed, and the countries have said, no, we don't want that. We don't want a document which tells us how safe or how unsafe our hospital is.
So is the timing better today?
It's improving.
Okay.
And in developing the index, of course, we have tested, and we have been able to get some countries to accept that we could test our index on their hospitals.
What would be the best measurement of success in this project?
The best measurement of success is if the recipient countries actually implement the recommendations, which would be the final part of the report. So the safety index is a tool. So what happens is that the investigators, using this tool, would go and examine a hospital. And what would the end result, one of the end results would be a measure in terms of percentage safety of that facility. Not only looking at the structure, but also at non-structural components, and also at organizational aspects of the hospital. So it's not only the physical facilities, but also the organizational aspect of the hospital is part of the safety index. And then at the end, there'll be a list of recommendations. These are the things you need to do to move your percentage from 60% to 90% or 100%. Now, a measure of success is to the extent to which our recommendations are implemented by the owners or custodians of the hospitals.
And I had asked earlier if there was any collaboration at a community level, and by that, with regard to this project, I wonder if training opportunities, or if you're working with local building inspectors or people who may be working more locally with the hospitals to better...
What is useful to do, and what we try to do, is that in the team investigating any particular hospital, there must be people from that particular country. Because I think it was Pandit Nehru, first Prime Minister of India, who said, if you help me without my input, you harm me. So if we are going into, I mean, I'm from the Caribbean, but I'm not from every island. I'm living in Barbados, and if I go to St. Lucia to look at a hospital, and I've done this, by the way, I try to get a St. Lucian to work along with me, so that I would not be attempting to help St. Lucia without involving St. Lucia. And in fact, we have now done 4 studies of healthcare facilities in St. Lucia, and on every occasion we have consciously involved a person living and working in St. Lucia.
Is there anything else you would like to share with us about your experience as a private sector professional, having consulted in the public sector?
Well, I'm a very old man now. As you can see, I'm approaching 100. I've had a long career, and I am convinced that human beings make errors, and that the way we should do, if we want to increase significantly the good performance of our buildings, especially our critical buildings, our institutional buildings, we should have independent reviews of design for all such buildings. Every healthcare facility ought to be designed by one team and independently reviewed by another team or person. And that team or person doing the independent review is not just anybody. It needs to be a person with a degree of education and training and experience which makes that person or team credible to review the project. The reviewer must be at least as good as the designer, and preferably better than the designer.
Excellent. Thank you for your time in speaking with me today here at the Global Platform for Disaster Risk Reduction. I was speaking with Tony Gibbs, consultant to the company Consulting Engineer Partnerships Limited from Barbados and consultant to PAHO on the Hospital Safety Index project. Thank you very much. Hospital Safety Index.